racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
From Kentucky down, Franklin, Kentucky. I don't know what all the fuss was about with weather. I don't know. I think they were selling us a bill of goods. It is absolutely as gorgeous and glorious a morning here in south central Kentucky, just north of the Tennessee border, that you could possibly ask for. High 70s, low 80s. I don't see a cloud anywhere. So I don't know what they were talking about with all this. Oh, it's going to rain all week. It's going to be terrible. Well, we'll revisit this on Monday after the weekend. Rick Hammerly joining me. Good morning, everybody. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM Online. And at the website, stevebick.com. Day two here from Kentucky Downs and day four of the race season. Hammer, seems like you couldn't ask for a better scenario here mid-meet.
Well, you mentioned the weather. It's perfect. And when you say they, you must make sure that the they was the weathermen that predicted all this doom and gloom all week. But maybe it was you that brought the good weather into town. But, I mean, I'll tell you what, Steve, you're right. It's probably 65 degrees here now. Gorgeous. And it couldn't have been better. I mean, I snuck out late afternoon yesterday and actually played nine holes of golf. It was that nice.
Kenny Perry is from here.
Kenny Perry, he has a golf course 5 minutes away. You don't even get on the highway to get to. I went with a couple of the younger generation here, and we went out and played nine holes. And we were out there. We didn't see another golfer. I said, what's going on here? So I don't know what the people in Franklin were doing yesterday, but they were playing golf. And I tell you what, if you come this year, bring your golf clubs. I think it was $22 to play nine holes. I thought we were going to have trouble getting on.
How about that?
Welcome to the public. And I got to admit, I did one thing that I've never done before, but I guess I am in Kentucky. We had a little moonshine on the course that the young bucks had brought out, and it wasn't just moonshine; it was butter pecan moonshine, and that went down very smoothly. And so that was pretty fun out there. The head was knocking a little bit this morning. I couldn't figure out why, but must have been a
funny
late reaction. Yeah, we went out to eat last night. It was fine. And all of a sudden, boy, that head was pounding this morning. So, you know what? Nothing like golfing Kentucky without a little moonshine.
Well, and I think I'm gonna go out on a limb. I mentioned it to you yesterday when you said that, you know, it was a packaged, you know, like a mason jar. And last year when I was here and had the time to explore, as I am wont to do, and I discovered something yesterday that I put up on Twitter. I found this Dueling Grounds Distillery, and it's very unassuming. It's a small building, and they have got and built a hell of a reputation for their various distilled products. And I brought back a Shine product that Tina enjoyed, and then there was the bourbon with the blue label, and it's the Linkum Pinch brand is the name of Linkum Pinch, but duelinggroundsdistillery.com if you want to see what we're talking about. Absolutely gorgeous. We haven't opened that bottle of bourbon yet, so nobody came to the house and said, and this was a bottle of bourbon that, you know, I've got the bottles of bourbon that you don't want to open that are autographed, you know, the maker's marks and all of those things, the racing collectibles. This one is ready to be tasted and consumed. So I would recommend, I mean, from what I can tell, because I haven't had a drink in, I don't know, 15 years, but this, I was impressed.
Well, it's one of the many things you can do within a 15,
oh, the bourbon trail.
Within a 15,
sure.
20, 30-mile radius of here, through Bowling Green and the Corvette Museum up there, of course. Mentioned the golf and all kinds of distilleries around here.
Well, and I told everybody last year, because I was so excited, as a food fan. I don't know what would you describe me as being maniacal about food. Duncan Hines was from Bowling Green and had his office in Bowling Green. It's now actually either a real estate office or maybe a funeral home or something. But the Western Kentucky, on the grounds of the university, there's a museum, and they've got a Duncan Hines exhibit that I couldn't wait to go see, and went last year, and it was just fabulous. There's a lot going on in Bowling Green, and yesterday, after I went to get that new cord for the microphone, no more problems with the mic. As I'm driving, I wanted to go to Cheney's to the Dairy Barn for an ice cream. I wander into this aviation park. Five aircraft that are dedicated to Kentucky's military aviators. There's a placard for each, for five various Kentucky legends of military aviation, and with accompanying aircraft that they flew most regularly. It middle of no, I mean, just literally just sitting there next to actually a skate park. I put it up on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, Bowling Green, and Bowling Green is about 25 miles,
not even,
to the north.
Not even.
And in the 4 years that I've been here, it's seems like it's grown, become a little bit more modernized. And then let's not forget, a half hour to the Billy due south is Nashville.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of stuff. I'm planning on going back to the Country Music Hall of Fame down there. One of the super Hall of Fames, if you want to call it, museum, sports museums.
Sure.
I'm not a huge country guy, so to speak, but they have a wonderful display down there. Johnny Cash Museum's down there. I mean,
Johnny Cash, you're the one who tipped me off to go to the county seat here in Franklin, in the town hall, because June Carter and Johnny Cash were married here, because they didn't have to have a waiting period after they took out the marriage license.
And they would,
in Tennessee.
Right, so they do north, you know, that's why
they came here.
Came here and got married where they're at the dueling grounds.
Got married in a fever.
Hotter than a
pepper sprout.
We better stop there.
Nobody wants to hear this. wait a minute, we got an important message coming in. And here's Eric Hamelbeck weighing in on WKU. Broadcasting and journalism program, I think his daughter
Hannah, I believe, is here.
She's interning.
Yeah, following some, some of the Jenny. I think following Jenny around, doing photographs, doing all kinds of stuff.
Very cool.
Here, so
well, and the most who is for racing purposes the greatest hilltopper of them all, John Asher.
John Asher.
The late John Asher. The king of the hilltoppers.
There you go.
Yeah. So. In fact, the hilltop logo, the hilltop mascot, it was basically kind of shaped like John, but I couldn't resist. John would appreciate that at certain times, because of John was like a pendulum when it came to... I may get a tomato thrown at me at Churchill next week.
Oh, that's funny. I only had the pleasure to meet him one time in a meeting, and
amazing man.
I never heard a bad word ever said about him. Always a smile always comes to someone's face when you bring his name up.
A legend, just a complete legend, taken way too soon. Speaking of Kentucky legends, I tipped my hand on Twitter. How about, let's see. How many Halls of Fame is Dan Issel a member of? The College Hall of Fame, Colorado Hall of Fame, National Basketball Hall of Fame, the Kentucky Sports Hall of Fame. I don't even know how many others. And a broadcaster in his own right, Dan Issel is going to join us this morning. And we probably should throw a couple of... racing topics at him, but being the age that Hammer and I are, it's going to be very hard not to talk the red, white, and blue basketball of the ABA.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a treat for me, and having him here. And like you said, a big Kentucky guy. I mean, obviously.
As big a legend in Kentucky, and not limited, you know, to basketball. Kentucky's got, it's funny, Kentucky, if we thought about it, we could probably identify each sport where, you know, there's the biggest legend of each sport. Pee Wee Reese, certainly, Paul Hornung, right?
You mean involved in racing?
Of each sport, just all the different sports that that came out of, that hailed from Kentucky. It'd be interesting. Dan Issel joining us this morning.
But actually, he's here to do his own show at 9 o'clock our time with, I think, ESPN or some local show, I don't know. So he's here, and Jenny said he's offered to come on and sit down with us for a little bit. So I'm excited, like you said, to talk a little basketball with Dan.
A couple of notes you mentioned. I want to get this in. I've already put up the selections. This is a really fun card, and I did not necessarily expect to end up handicapping and writing up all, not all. I did races 2 through 10. At first, I was just going to do the pick, late pick 5. Then I said, well, look at this. There's a middle pick 4. So I did that. And then I said, well, I'm going to do the second race because we like these maiden specials up here, that the 2-year-olds. I said, let's look at these pedigrees. So suddenly, I had done races 2 through 10.
Well, that took a long time, I'll bet.
Most of it I'd looked at yesterday, and I only needed to really this morning make decisions about races 2, 3, and 4. This is predictably a brutal ticket building exercise again, and I think that there's some help to be had from Sharp as Attack in the Juvenile Stake.
Let's go through the scratches while I have them. Buzz by the office.
Excellent. Where's my...
Get out your pens and...
let's go.
It's okay, in the first race, make sure we have the right day, Thursday, September 8th, we're scratching the 2-horse Mission Bell.
Angel Hernandez.
In the second race, we're going to scratch the 11 Tree Pat. Scratch 13 Augustus Blue, 14 Zed, 15 The Bookkeeper. And as of right now, Curlin's in charge will run.
Well, if Dale Romans if he gets an AE in, he's going to run. So the 16 is going to potentially show up. So look at the back page. Don't forget that horse, that hanging, dangling participle on the last page. Curlin's in charge.
In the third race, I'm not going to give you a number because there's an entry. It's Balakazoo.
Balakazoo is the 2, and, of course, he ran the other day for Doc Gorham at Colonial.
Okay, in the fourth race, the 6-horse Frosted Departure.
Okay, you know that was a weird. I thought that was a horse I could not make heads or tails of. That's a funny race, and in fact, talk about this for a second, Rick. This is a $250,000 purse, a stake purse, for horses that were either purchased or R&A'd even at Keeneland. Brendan Walsh is starting a firster in here. It's $250,000.
I mean, the idea at this meet was to get the 2-year-olds out there, whether they be maidens or allowance horses or stake horses, and so come up with a little wrinkle here, and you know, like you said, if you were sold or RNA'd at the Keeneland sale, give them a little push and run for 250.
Wow.
So, hey, if there's their maidens and they're doing well, why not take a shot?
Oh, sure. No,
run back in 3 weeks.
If you're third, it's for God's sakes, it's worth real money. It's worth $25,000.
So we said the 6, Frosted Departure. Let's also scratch the 8, Prove Right.
Ooh, Prove Right, I thought had a look. All right, so we got to swap out for Jim Chapman.
In the 5th race, we'll take out the 13, 14, 15, and 16.
The also's A's
will be out. In the 6th race, we're scratching the 2...
Scarpia. That horse had real chance. This is also the other auction race.
The 5, Crack-a-Lacking.
Crack-a-Lacking.
And the 8, Grand Oak.
Who ran the other day for Grand Motion at Colonial.
Right. And
so leaves a 7-horse field.
Right. Let's go down to the 7th race and scratch the also's. 13, 14, 15, and 16 will be out. And let's go to the eighth race where we're going to scratch the sixth in Courage.
Ooh.
I was going to use
Encourage, the McPeak, huh?
We're scratching the 13 Basso.
Yep.
And the 15 Protonic Power. The other two are in right now.
Well, so that would be you. Well, that's an important scenario. You can run four. You're going to run 14.
No, we got two out. Wait a minute.
One. You have one out. You mentioned
we have one out. They're waiting. They're waiting to see. They had a shipping thing to see which one's coming out. So I didn't want to give you which one.
So right now, so either 14 or 16.
Looks that way. The 6 is out, and then the 13 and the 15 are out.
So the 14 would be in if they get him here, Sal Guerrero, and...
I was in there this morning before the stewards were there, so I just grabbed the sheet,
right.
Hold on to that.
Hold on. Keep very close tabs on this, because if Tom Amos gets in with Future Victory, if Future Victory runs, he is a major, major player.
We'll find out before the show. We'll make a call.
The stake.
The Global Tote. We have a few out here. We have the three. Ooh. Bourbon.
Spirit.
The four. Fade the noise. And the bottom horse, Half a Chance. So we have another five horse field, which is
the sharpest attack is going to be a major handful.
In the 10th race, 13 and 14 are out.
Ugh, this race is so tough. The nightcap, what a strange set this is. You got a dozen of them that are looking to break their maiden, fillies and mares. They're going to go 10 and a half furlongs. And I mean, I don't know how you eliminate anybody automatically. I mean, there's a couple of horses that seem very unlikely, but the rest of the field, I've got one ticket where I'm using eight, and I'm not comfortable. Crazy.
That's not uncommon here.
Wow. No, this is,
you know,
this is brutal.
But at if you get to eight,
It's an all button. But you also have, you know, financial considerations, budget considerations, too. You know?
I do know. But if you're going and you're playing and you like the other legs and you're pretty confident, that's when you do hit the all button.
So there you go. There's your scratches, and that should be a big help to people to get out ahead of it. First post. 1:25 Eastern. We'll do plenty of handicapping as the morning unfolds. And should we try to rope?
Yes, why not? Yeah. Let's get Mr. Issel over here if we can.
If he's prepared to figure the earlier, right? The earlier, the better. And then. A real pleasure. Dan Issel. There we go. Yeah. The headset or the mic? It's up to you. There you go. Quite excited, to say the least, to have Dan Issel join us this morning. And Dan's got his own broadcasting responsibilities to take on. Dan, first of all, welcome. Thanks so much for this. And tell everybody your shows and your...
Yeah, I do a show on ESPN Louisville I'm old. So I only do it from 10 to noon Eastern. So two hours a day, and I'm finished. But of course, we love the horse racing, and this is the second year that we've been down here to do the show from Kentucky down. So it's really unbelievable to come here to see the purses and see the horses and see the jockeys. I mean, it's a real treat to be here.
And what about the track?
Yeah.
Nothing like that wouldn't
I talked last year. We had Larry Colmus on our show, and of course he talked about how difficult it is. I mean, basically the last half mile of the races, the horses are running straight at you. I don't know right. how he calls it, but he does a great job.
Yeah, the other day it was with the rain and the mist. You couldn't even really, you know, if he's relying on silks, which is typical. Even that had to be a handful, but he actually kept
the action. I'm fascinated by people that are able to do that, because you have to memorize, and here especially with the purses, I mean, there's 12, 14 horses in every field. It's not like, you know, there's seven, six horse fields. But to be able to memorize the horses' names with the silks in that short period, I think even more impressive than that is you completely have to flush it out of your mind and get ready for the next race. So I really admire people that are able to do that.
Well, many times down here, Larry and I have been friends for a long time, I'll call him and say, hey, you want to go get something to eat? And he'll text back, I'm coloring. Meaning, you know, he's putting the silks in next to the horses. Yeah. And, you know, I always say, I hope you got the 64 crayon thing for here, because, like you said, Dan, it's big. Steve and I were talking, and you know what? We're glad that you're involved in the racing and all this. But I tell you what, as basketball, for us, we're in the same general time frame. I grew up in Los Angeles.
Okay.
As a kid. And was, you know, Laker fan all the way. And you were safe for me to follow. Okay? If you can understand that. So, you know, we hated the Lakers. Hated the Celtics and the da-da-da-da. And here you came along, and I don't know why you always stuck out with me. And I'm going to tell you a weird connection. Daryl Imhoff.
Yeah.
I don't know if he played with the Lakers, all right? And he was 6'10".
Yep.
And you, for some reason, you guys connected as because of the height, and here you were scoring 30 some points a game. You know, Daryl was in there bounding away. He was just a good journeyman player. And I always thought, I go, man, when we could trade Daryl. I mean, I'm 10, 12 years old. We could trade Daryl Imhoff for Dan Issel as you were scoring. But you were safe to follow and like, because you played in the ABA.
Yep.
And
yep.
followed your career through yep. and just
well, thank you.
And you know, one of the first big guys that could shoot.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what was fascinating. And just I can't believe I'm sitting here talking to you. It was great.
Well, thank
following
you.
You around and
thank you.
And I knew you were up in the top three or four as all-time point scorer,
right.
among other stats. And I couldn't think, and I had to cheat this morning, who was number one? Louis Dampier. And, like, man, he was an iron horse. He led the league in assists and points. But anyway.
Louis's a dear friend. I had dinner with him night before last, and he's still in Louisville. There are only two players that played for the very same ABA team. The ABA lasted 9 years,
right.
from day one to the end of the ABA. One was a guy named Byron Beck, who played with Denver. And Louis Dampier with the Kentucky Colonels. So, yeah, Louis, the all-time leading scorer in the history of the ABA, all-time leading three-point shooter. He assists. He's got about every record there is.
Yeah. And for some of the listeners, they might not even know what the ABA is or was. I mean, it was you know, the other league, but in many ways, they had so many things going on ahead of time. I mean, we were shooting 3 points. You know.
You know, there's with the exception of the red, white, and blue basketball, the NBA adopted almost everything the ABA came up with once there was enough time passed so that they could think it was their idea. You're absolutely right. The three-pointer, the All-Star weekend, the first slam dunk contest was at an ABA All-Star game in Denver. And so there were a lot of innovations in the ABA. When you're talking about the era of Imhoff, the NBA was basically walk the ball up the floor and try to force it into the big men, and the ABA was the more wide-open style. Today's game emulates what the ABA was much more than what the NBA used to be.
And on that topic, in fact, the freewheeling style, I mean, there's been wonderful documentaries about things related, and those innovations and the stars, of course, with Dr. J and you and so many more. You gotta relay a few ABA. I know our man Chuck Simon's listening, and Chuck said, "Ask him for ABA stories, and at least one will involve Marvin Barnes, because every ABA story I think it's a rule that Marvin has to be included."
Yeah, Marvin marched to a different drummer for sure, and Bob Costas, who was 23 years old. And when he was the play-by-play man on the radio for the Spirit of St. Louis.
Yep.
And he tells a great story. We have him on the show every 6 months. And with the time change, they were getting on an airplane in Louisville, and the flight left at 8 o'clock, which, of course, was Eastern, and it landed in St. Louis at 7:58. And Marvin said, I'm not getting in any time machine, and they actually had to talk him into getting on the airplane to fly. But you know, the reason the ABA lasted, we were never able to get a national TV contract. The reason that it lasted as long as it did was because at that point, the NBA could not draft you until your college class graduated. Now, it didn't matter if you went to college, but they still couldn't draft you until that class graduated. And the ABA, I've told people, they'd take an eighth grader if they thought he could play. And that's how we got great talent that came out of school early, like you mentioned, George McGinnis, George Gerber, line. And we had, by the time the merger happened, when the four ABA teams, the Nets, the Pacers, the Spurs, and the Nuggets, by the time the merger happened, we had better talent in the ABA than they had in the NBA because of all those great young players.
Couple of things, too, people may not, certainly if you're a certain age, you'd have no recollection, but you played under some of the most legendary coaches that have
taught. Four coaches. Four of my coaches are in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Adolph Rupp at UK. Larry Brown, Hubie Brown, who coached our ABA championship team, and Hubie wears his ABA championship ring to this day. If you see him on some of the broadcasts, because he's still doing it, and I think one of the best, not one of the best, I still think the best at what he does.
Greatest.
And if you look closely, you'll see on his right hand his ABA championship ring. And who am I leaving out? Frank Ramsey. Was the coach, coached us for 1 year in the ABA, my rookie year.
Did he really?
Yeah, with the Colonels. So, I was blessed to play for some great coaches.
And flesh those out. And start with Adolph Rupp, because obviously the tail end of his legendary career. And how long at Kentucky? How many years?
42 years.
42.
I know this because we just talked about it yesterday on our show. He came to Kentucky in 1930 and retired in 1972, and was the winningest coach when he retired. For as successful as he was, the most superstitious man I've ever met. Of course, the story of the man in the brown suit, when he was in high school, he was coaching in Freeport, Illinois, and he had this old brown tattered suit, and the Boosters bought him a new blue suit. And so opening day the next season, he wore his new blue suit and got beat. And the next day, he had his brown suit on.
Back out.
And in 42 years at Kentucky, he never coached in anything other than a brown suit. But my favorite story is my freshman year. Of course, freshmen weren't eligible. But my freshman year, we stayed in a place called the Knoll Hotel in downtown Knoxville, Tennessee. And this place was so old, it still had an elevator operator with grates that you pull back. And it was a toilet. I mean, it was awful. And so my sophomore year, we play, and they had built a brand-new Sheridan on the campus at UT. And we got killed. we got beat, destroyed. The next year, we were back at the Knoll, Hotel. But that was fun. That was fun.
So you played at Kentucky in the end of the 60s, right?
Graduated in 1970.
So did you, now once again, I'm going to go back to my homer, UCLA basketball. Yeah. Did you play against some of the great Bruin teams?
No, we never got there. The year, my sophomore year, we got beat the finals of the regional before going to UCLA. Of course, UCLA had a guy by the name of Lou Alcindor, who was pretty good, and they were winning. But the ironic part is then my senior year at Kentucky, we were defeated by Jacksonville and Artis Gilmore, who became one of my best friends and my teammate with the Colonels later on. And everybody thought, well, you know, Kareem's gone. Somebody else is going to win the championship. And UCLA won it again without Kareem. So, yeah, they pretty much dominated college basketball when I was in school.
Because there wasn't a lot of, at that time, cross-country playing. You really didn't play out of your region too often.
And you didn't play nearly as many games either.
That's true.
We'd play maybe five or six non-conference games. We always played Notre Dame in Freedom Hall on New Year's Eve, and that was about the biggest non-conference game we had, and then we started SEC play.
At that time, there was no Louisville UK.
It was a big deal. Yeah, it took an act of the state legislature to get U of L and UK to play.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was living in Cincinnati. Yes, I remember.
That rivalry is rather new.
Joe B.
Coach Rupp would never play any other Kentucky schools because he thought, you know, they've got everything to gain and I've got everything to lose. You know what's ironic about this is, I love to talk about horses, and you guys want to talk about basketball.
I'm sorry. I just have one more question. We talk about the points and all that. How long did it take the NBA to finally say, okay, you know what, we'll take your points from the ABA?
I don't think they ever have. I think that some people will include ABA numbers with NBA. But if you went to the NBA website right now, and ask for a list of all-time leading scorers, you wouldn't see Julius Erving or me or anybody else who used the ABA points that counted. And what's even worse than that, I mean, that really doesn't matter. But what really hurt was that the players never got credit for their ABA years as far as the retirement is concerned. And just this year, I mean, the ABA merged with the NBA in 1976. Just this year, the NBA has agreed to give players in the ABA some kind of, those that are still alive, I think there's like 108 of them. If you didn't qualify, now I qualified, Artis qualified, Louie qualified for an NBA pension. So we don't get to participate in that, which is fine. If you played 3 years in the ABA, you didn't qualify for an NBA pension, they're going to start paying you some money starting this year from 1976. So it took a while.
Well, this is, and you come from an era that really signified between Curt Flood and everything that trickled out of there, the power, throw in Marvin Miller in baseball. Yeah. You come from an era that saw a shift of power to the Players Association.
No question. You know, when I was naming all of those players that came out early, Julius and George and all those players, the name I left out, which is probably the most important name, is a guy by the name of Spencer Haywood.
That's right.
Because Spencer Haywood came to the ABA, played for Denver, but then he fought the courts. I jumped to the Seattle Supersonics and won the case. So he is the Curt Flood of professional basketball.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's a story that is really obscured. I mean, I'm glad you would bring that up. I want to throw one other thing at you. Given you come from an era, you grew up in basketball I imagine, still in the shadow of the point shaving era from the 50s, BC and NYU. And the fallout from that, we now have got a proliferation of sports betting. I'm just curious about your thoughts and if your view of this, the potential for sports betting, legal sports betting, if your view of it changed over the years at all.
You know, it's the thing about the we never went, we being the University of Kentucky, never went to New York to play because Coach Rupp, you know, he had, and what was unbelievable, that team called the Fabulous Five. Alex Groza, Ralph Beard, names nobody would recognize unless you're my age. But they were so good that they didn't lose games. They still won the game. They just made sure that
they didn't win by too many.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, can you imagine the point spread is 10, and you go out and say, okay, well we're going to win the game, but we're only going to win by 9. And that team went to Indianapolis and started their own NBA team.
Did they?
The Indianapolis Olympians.
Wow.
And they lasted 1 year because then it all came out. You know, we in the ABA, again, we had some great players that the NBA wouldn't take. Connie Hawkins was in the points shaving scandal. And others. But, you know, it's always about the money. It's always about the money. The leagues were dead set. All the leagues were dead set against. I mean, they wouldn't even have games in Las Vegas until now they get part of the. They're partners with these betting sites. And so, you know, it's always about the money.
There's a fascinating book written. It's called The Wizard of Odds, ODDS, about point shaving around that era. I forget who was the main player there, but just like you said, they would go ahead and win the games, but just not by as much as the line said.
No, it's incredible.
And so everybody was happy, so to speak.
Yeah.
Dan Issel with us, everybody, the Hall of Fame legend. And when I say Hall of Fame, that includes Colorado Hall of Fame, NBA Hall of Fame, Collegiate Basketball, Kentucky Sports Hall of Fame. Who did you grow up idolizing and trying to emulate?
Nothing with basketball.
You're a baseball guy.
Yeah. Yeah, grew up a huge Cub fan. I grew up right outside of Chicago. I grew up thinking I was going to take Ernie Banks's place at shortstop.
A little tall for shortstop.
But that was Ernie Banks was my hero. That was my sports hero growing up. I wanted to play shortstop and be just like Ernie Banks.
I love it. Where'd you grow up in Chicago?
A little place called Batavia. It's about 40 miles west of Chicago.
That's where you played your high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basketball.
How and in terms of horse racing overall, when was it when you came to Kentucky?
I grew up on a dairy farm, so I've always loved the agricultural aspect of it. My father owned half of a Pacer when I was in high school. We used to go into Maywood Park in Chicago.
I'm playing North Avenue, baby.
And her name was Mary's Pal. Mary's Pal. That was the Pacer that my dad owned. But then when I went to UK and saw the farms, I fell in love. And I'm not, I mean, I bet. I'm not going to say I don't bet on, but I love every aspect of it. I love the breeding. We've got, my son and I have a little partnership, and we've got a yearling in the Keeneland September sale next week.
What book?
He is hip number 1742, Sunday in book 3.
Yeah.
The second day of book 3. And we're really excited. You know, you make so many mistakes in this game, but last year we bred our mare, our best mare is a candy ride mare, and we bet her to Not This Time.
Oh, good job.
And so you know, that's the cross of Epicenter and Simplicity, and so we're really, really excited about that. So we love the game. We absolutely love it.
Unbelievable. Well, Dan, I can't thank you enough for this. I know you've got your show starting. This is a complete pleasure.
Well, thank you. I love it. I love doing this, and I love the horse racing. So, and what a beautiful morning we have here. Just incredible.
It's a Kentucky. And you know, anyone with that shirt on, the blue with the UK, yeah. You got to love horses
let
too,
me tell,
right?
Let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you a little secret. If it wasn't for the free stuff, I wouldn't have much of a wardrobe.
Ridiculous.
That's I'm trying to look around to see if I have any free stuff on. I don't today.
About this.
We'll see you. We'll see you Breeders' Cup as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't miss it. Let me ask you one question.
Spending the day here?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you one question. I saw this morning, when I get up in the morning, the first thing I read is the Thoroughbred Daily News. I don't look at the ESPN or any of that other stuff. I saw that Mr. Ronis said there was a chance Flightline would run.
Oh, yeah.
How? They can't do that. With studs having books of 250 mares and shuttling to the Southern Hemisphere, this has got to be the most valuable horse ever.
What did he say? I'm sorry.
He said there was a chance that he would run again next year.
Let me tell you about Mr. Hronis, Costa Hronis, a Superman, super family. Grew up in California,
sure.
In Santa Anita, and was there for many, many years. He grew up watching the races in the grandstand at Santa Anita. And, you know, him and his family, they do some grapes up in the Central Valley.
Okay.
And, you know, he didn't start racing until, I'm going to say, about 10 years ago. Got hooked up with the perfect trainer in John Sadler. When I say perfect trainer, you know, some matches work, some don't. This just worked perfect. John's a very patient trainer. Honest trainer, and the from the day one they hit it off. They were buying horses, winning, and you know, kind of coming up through the ranks. And Costa loves the game. And he's honored, believe me, to have this horse.
Oh, of course.
But he's such a sportsman that, you know, whatever, he's going to breed. But if he offered to do that, it's because of just him and the way he loves the game, and he wants people to see this beautiful horse.
I've told people that race, the TVG Pacific Classic, is the most impressive horse race I've seen since Secretariat's Belmont. I mean, it was those were legitimate grade one horses that were 20 lengths up the track. It's just... Hey, thank you all. Thank you very much.
A complete pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Dan Issel.
I had to
shake his hand a second time because it wraps all the way around mine.
Don't have to ask him if he can palm a ball. That's for sure.
Dan Issel, everybody, and countless halls of fame. Loves racing. You can catch him on ESPN Louisville as well. And
hey, how are you? Nice to see you.
Just...
That was
exactly what we expected.
That was fantastic. What a Superman.
That's great. That is the
that's a wrap, folks.
That's it. We'll talk to you tomorrow. When you bring up ABA and Marvin Barnes, that is the go-to story. I ain't getting the no time machine.
I mean, yeah.
that's the famous quote.
I mean, you had to feel him. He could have told stories for hours and hours. And you know, with the gleam in his eye, like he just loved reliving him. That was great. That's a thrill for me, personally.
Yeah, no, I there's so many aspects. I mean, I could have pressed him more. You know, there's some very interesting social discussions to be had. Frankly, involving Adolph Rupp, and you can talk about the UTEP, you know, the Western Texas confrontation, there's a lot. There was a lot, and I did want to ask. We didn't really flesh out the sports betting topic, but I knew that he, knowing how that I'm 62 and grew up, well aware of the point shaving scandal. That rocked college basketball. I was curious with all the sports gambling going on now, what somebody like him would discuss, and points for bringing up Spencer Haywood. That's everybody reaches for Kurt Flood, but the Spencer Haywood story is equally fascinating. And basically, those players from his era having to fight for control of their own careers, the ability to become free agents, essentially.
Total different era.
They were
in everything.
Even
jockeys were ahead of the curve in terms of unionizing and getting their independence from being indentured servants compared to professional athletes.
Well, I know growing up, that would, you know, I didn't follow that stuff. I just was looking at the score sheets and following the guy. Seriously, I mean, that wasn't, you know, so I didn't. But I remember, when you see, it's funny, because when he mentioned Spencer Haywood, I just think immediate Seattle Supersonics, and I didn't know the history of that. And he mentioned Connie Hawkins, and I was thinking he was NBA, but I think he played for the Globetrotters.
He was basically being prevented from.
He was ruled off.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he joined the Lakers for a little bit. So this flashback when anybody's going through this stuff, it's fantastic. And I asked about the Bruins because I wasn't sure. I know they didn't play, you know, cross country like they do today, obviously. And he said what, five out of conference games, which makes sense. You play your division twice and then five other games. And you were 19-1 or something like that, not 32-3 like they are today. But I was interested to see if he made him somewhere met, you know, Lou Alcindor in the finals, which would have been kind of cool.
Well, and you know, I had to bring up as he was talking about matchups and about where, you know, the regions or the, you know, the interfacing of UK with, you know, whatever conference foes that they ended up, you know, scheduling. I was living in Cincinnati when that all, I'm almost positive, when that happened to basically force Kentucky to play Louisville every year. And it went to Frankfurt to get that accomplished.
It's
an amazing, I'm sure there's magazine articles or things that have been written about it.
And I'm sure that, just like everything was so regional back then, here was Kentucky and stuff, and we had UCLA, and was there other basketball besides UCLA? When we grew up, we didn't even care about anything else, and so I didn't even know about that. I just
so
figured that was
dominant.
Just figured that was a 100-year rivalry.
Yeah, well, it should have been, but it wasn't until Denny Crum and Joe B. Hall that they started to.
Denny Crum. He came from UCLA,
and as ingrained in the game as anybody. In fact, that we'll have to track this yearling hip next week for Dan and his son going through the ring, and not this time out of the. I'll have to go look it up out of the candy ride mare. Couple of things we're going to get. I promised that Robert Falcone. I want to get Robert in. Off the win the other day in Colonial. We also have to do a little bit of the Colonial recap. In fact, I can slip that in as we speak from yesterday's visit. How about the newly gelded Wolfie's Dynaghost? Morning line was a little out of whack. Wolfie's Dynaghost goes off at 3-5 and wires that group in the Burt Allen. So it's a new and different version of Wolfie at the age of 4. And he'll be around for a long time now for Woods Lane and Tom Albertrani. But that was the clear step forward. You also had the sequence, Sendero, as much as Jessica had mentioned. Just an easy slam dunk. Just single and move forward. And Sendero for Todd Pletcher. And Harrell Ventures, this City of Light Colt. And I keep reminding, City of Light is getting a lot of turf winners. Then Tass ends up winning for Carlos Martin and Matt Shira. Tass by a nose over Unruly Julie, the Karen Godsey, was a big price, 22-1. The mutuals in here were unbelievable. With Mo Claire off the board at 3-2, he ended up with Tass at 15-20. Unruly Julie 14-40 to place. Malibu Curl was 7-2. But then you had the longest shot on the board, Amplio Eskima, finish fourth. The Superfecta, the 10-cent Superfecta, $746. So for a buck, $7,400 with the longest shot on the board. And then Spun Glass at 3-2. And this race actually came out A little bit like what we were suggesting. Spun glass, I mentioned the Trombetta for Larry Johnson, one of his homebreds, a hard-spun mare. She was too good in here. Rampart, the Stidham, a good second as the second choice. That Island Philo that I liked finishes third here, 22-1, and the try didn't pay great, but it was 50 bucks for a buck, so it was okay. But I happened to see Kenny Kirchner yesterday leaving, and Kenny's here doing the simulcast management, and he's the man for years that taught us the reverse tri key, and here was a perfect example of Island Philo. I said, you know, here's going to be a big price, going to come clunking up for a piece. Sure enough, third at 22-1. We love that angle. And then finally, the Meadow Stable and Boldore, that the horse that we thought a year ago was going to become a top-level turf sprinter. Not necessarily top-level, but Boldore getting his share. This was a good price, 7-1, 16-20, and Grateful Bread beaten as the 6-5 favorite in here. Madison Myers, very nice Grateful Bread. But the Meadow Stable, the last stake of the year at Colonial. Steve Asmussen for the Oars with Arad Ortiz Jr., who had himself quite a couple of days at Colonial. And the season ended with just a claimer that is notable for a reason. I wanted to bring his name up yesterday, and I forgot. Mohammed Mubarak.
Back in the saddle.
Back in the saddle. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that's Mohammed's first... I think he'd only had a handful of starts thus far, and I will confirm that. But I got the biggest kick out of seeing his name in the program the other day, and he comes away with a win. I'll tell you right now, here we go. Is this, no, that's the stake. Where is that? I can't find the PPs that I had from this card. So, anyway, Mohammed Mubarak back on the tally sheet, as it were. And then also, while we're doing this, let me slide in the two stakes. We didn't get a chance yesterday, sadly, to talk to Rachel McLaughlin. But meanwhile, at Horseshoe, the...
You didn't talk about the Derby winner, did you? The Virginia Derby winner?
Wasn't yesterday.
Is that what you're good, Colonial?
Well, that was on Monday they ran. This was a handful of Virginia.
Day.
Yeah, the romping winner of the Back Home Again, Hot Little Thing for Rudy Brissett, September Farm and Company. This is an Army Mule filly. So congratulations to Hill and Dale. We'll get another now a stake winner for Army Mule out of an Uncle Mo mare, Buffon. And then Good Forever, Gennaro Garcia for Southwest Stables wins the Circle City at a big price, 18-1, paid $39.40. With Marcelino Pedroza, Good Forever, and one like a top choice, actually, did Good Forever. This is a Forever Doro, bred by Hidden Springs in Indiana. So, nice day, nice card yesterday. They did $2 million again. Very quietly, just plugging away, Indiana, $2 million, $2.5 million, just a solid card. Over and over again, and we'll be back into now with Saratoga and Del Mar over, we can get back to a regular featuring of Indy. And
they've done a good job of establishing themselves on the calendar.
Very much.
For a track that runs as long as they do.
Yes.
Through September.
Later.
I mean, November, excuse me.
Yeah.
Through November.
Keep going.
They've done a good job. They fit in and, picking the spots on the calendar that are best suited for them, and the name change hasn't hurt. Sometimes you hear that name change and they kind of go away, but the Horseshoe is stuck. Very good. Speaking of that, I want to run down the meet leaders here so far. We have run 3 days and we've got four to go. So in the jockey standings, Tyler Gaffleone, who started out as a rocket ship, he's still in front. He's got 5 wins. Hot Pursuit, Julian Le Peru with 4. Geraldo Corrales, who has been really riding up a storm in Kentucky in general.
Yes.
And he's being used by a lot more trainers as we move along. He's also got four victories. And that's further followed by Ricardo Santana, Adam Biskitsa.
Biscuit!
Edgar Zayas, Joel Rosario, who just came on the scene. I think he's only ridden one day. He's got the two out of the eight, as does Edgard. And Brian Hernandez with two victories the other day. James Graham, Joe Talamo, Vincent Chaminade, and Joe Rocco, and Relu Gutierrez have the rest of the wins as far as that. Jockeys go, and the trainers, we talked about the trainers last year, and I think we had three guys with four wins shared the title. But Mike Maker, who won three opening day, and he won three in the abbreviated Saturday card as well, so he's leading the way with six. Safi Joseph, who dabbled a little bit last year here at Kentucky Downs, and you could tell when he came in, and he's out sometimes in the mornings watching his horses, you could see or tell that he was a lot better prepared. He learned a lot last year. He kind of figured out which horses to bring and which horses would suit this course. He is second with three wins, along with Wesley Ward. Jeff Hiles, who had the double the other day, he's got the two victories. And Ken McPeak had a double the other day as well. He's got two. And lurking close behind are the guys, Shug and Shug McGahee, Mark Cassie, Brad Cox, Steve Asmussen, Mike Tomlinson, Ian Wilkes, Graham Motion got a win, Clement, Eric Foster, Jason Barkley, one for two, Rob Atrus is one for one, and Kelsey Danner, one for one. So those are the leaders as we head into the fourth day. And, we've talked about it since the beginning. If you're simply looking for things to do, just go with the hot people. They seem to have 2-3 day streaks here, and they continue to be they stay live.
Well, that's what happened last year with Rosario.
Right,
had like four of the 7 days. He just got off to this big rolling start, and some of it is just happenstance and just the way the book falls and the way. In this case, Ron Anderson is booking, picking mounts, but
yeah, they're quote good mounts might fall early or late in the card. They've been picked out and they do well. And Tyler Gaffney has been riding. He has five wins, four seconds, and two thirds. So he's 40 plus in the money, but he's been riding this course very well. And you can tell as you're watching the riders that ride with complete confidence of how to handle this, and there's still some, riders that just haven't grasped, I think, the length of this stretch, and it is so long, and the viewers, I think, can empathize with that. Is when they hit the eighth pole, I think there's sometimes you're like, yeah, whoa, what's going on here? They got an eighth of a mile to go.
They're still going.
And as Dan Issel pointed out, for the last, almost a half mile, they're running straight at you, so it's kind of hard to see even on the television to follow, and so it's good to go back and watch the replays and kind of see how some of the riders have adjusted to this kind of wild course layout.
Well, later we're going to do some handicapping with Joe Kristofek again. Joe was a huge help last week, kicking off the meet. He absolutely killed, including that 20-1 morning line shot that ended up going off, I think, at 13 to 1. Yeah.
No, Joe was here last year. Do you know if he's going to make an appearance? He was here for a few days last year.
What did he say last week? I think he did say that he was going to come in. He was going to come
for the weekend, maybe.
Maybe Saturday, or that he had planned to come down. Any number of people actually. Like I said yesterday, everybody, one after another, when it came up, when I was discussing my trip, one person after another said, "I'm going to go. We're going to go soon. We want to go down. We're going to plan that visit." So, it's on. It's increasingly on people's radar and on their list of places to come and visit and enjoy.
And why wouldn't you want to come here?
Exactly. Especially when, you got a day like today. I mean, this is spectacular. We've got, what do we got? Now we've got 9 o'clock Central Time. This takes some adjusting always for me. That I got up this morning. It was 3 o'clock, but I mentally said, "Well, it's 4." So let me get my work done. So I got up. I wrote up the card, and then I started to get tired. And I said, "You know what? I'm going to close my eyes again. I think for a little bit." And I fell asleep for a good hour, and I don't know, maybe an hour and a half. And so I woke up. And again, it works in reverse. You wake up, and it was I look up, and it's 7. And I said, "Oh, okay, I got 2 hours." No, I don't. I got an hour. I had to jump in the shower.
That's one thing I never fell for. The time.
Oh, I've always been bad with it.
Wherever I am, I put my watch on. That's what time it is. I don't go for the old, "Well, it's really 6 o'clock." Now, I've been here for 3 days. What do you mean it's really 6 o'clock? It's 8 o'clock. But the 2 hours here is crazy, because when you live on the East Coast or the West Coast, it's three. Everything's three, right? Boom, boom, boom. And then when you get to the middle, when you come across Arizona, which I still haven't figured out, they don't change their time. So I don't know whether they don't change their time from regular time or from daylight savings time. So you go through there, and your watch will change, but your car won't. And then you come across to New Mexico, and it's still, you got one, you know, your phone says it's 3, and your car says it's 2, and it's crazy. So, but you get here, we are 2 hours, and 2 hours for me, from Pacific time, and 1 hour from New York time. So the travel situations are crazy. And you were talking about your traveling this year, yesterday, about you coming through Erie, Pennsylvania to get here, and travel trips about way back home. I'm going instead of making a right turn, I'm making a left turn, and we're going to continue on to New Jersey after this little thing. And my wife Gina's coming out, and she's trying to decide whether to fly back or drive back with me.
Ooh.
Because the fly back, she knows what's going on, but the drive back with me,
It could go anywhere.
She goes, "How do you plan on coming?" In other words, if I'm in a bonsai, she doesn't want to do it. You know, if I want to wander up and see our friends in Hastings, Nebraska, we could do that, or we could end up in Jacksonville, Florida, crazily. So she knows me rather well, so we'll see what she ends up doing. But is this a perfect time to travel? I wish it was a little bit later to try and catch some of the fall. The fall colors here and there, and it was trying to delay, so it's going to be, you know, right around the end of September, so maybe we can catch some. Maybe we'll go through the Finger Lakes region
and
get lucky there. So I have got to run for a few seconds.
Go ahead,
we got a situation,
ahead.
And I will be,
not a problem.
Be right back.
There we go. Head to the break, actually, Case, and as we do that, I did find what I was looking for. I'm going to have to reach out to Mohammed Mubarak. He had started 55 horses going into yesterday and had 3 wins. So he's got a handful, and down in he's based down at Gulfstream. So I'm going to, we got to reach out. It's been way, way, way too long, since we talked. I got to check with Jenny, but, there was a chance that Eric Foster was going to join us, and, we would, talk about, his stake win the other day, as well. And, we're going to get after the top of the hour here after the break. 18 things happening here at once. After the break, we're going to reach for back to New York and talk to Robert Falcone off of his stake win as well. So just getting going. I got Joe Christofek for later as well. I'm I'm just looking for this. There it is. All right, beautiful. I wanted to make sure to keep the PPs from Wolfie's Dyna Ghosts victory, because Tom Albertrani had a nice win at Saratoga at the end of the meet. All right. I'm doing my best to keep everything organized. You also want to try to reach Doug O'Neill, who had a big weekend himself and sends out what now feels like I don't want to put any kind of a kibosh or a put them a like on Doug O'Neill, but sharp as a tack is going to take some beating. Let's just put it like that, right? Well, I'm going to talk to Jenny in a second. We should get a visit in with Jenny Reese too, because you can't come to Kentucky Downs and not talk to Jenny Reese. As soon as he's ready, as soon as he's done. All right. So Eric and Tim Wilkin. What a tremendous bench there is in the Capital District, because you can reach from Mike Kane, you can bring in Wilkin off the bench. They all just top level. We'll talk to Tim too. We'll do a little post Saratoga recapping. So there you go. Robert Falcone and Eric Foster coming up, and Tim Wilkin. Jenny, it is Thursday, so I didn't reach out to Joe. We owe Joe Clancy a visit as well. All right. Train pulled out of the station today with no less of a passenger than Dan Issel. I'll put up the pictures too. We got a good picture of him and Hammer. At the races, we're live at Kentucky Downs. We're going to put the basketball up on the shelf in the garage, like you do when the weather gets cold. Back after this. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
The Southern California Thoroughbred Racing Circuit returns to Los Alamitos with opening day set for Friday, September 16th. Four stakes races highlight the meet led by the Los Alamitos Special on Saturday, September 24th. The meet will feature stakes every Saturday and Sunday afternoon. And racing fans, the meet will also feature an on-track live money handicapping contest on Saturday, September 24th. You could win a berth to the 2022 NHC. And racing fans, the best of night racing continues at Los Alamitos every Saturday and Sunday night. Outstanding racing action is in store this weekend with stakes trials highlighting the racing car. Plus, our nighttime $2 pick six continues to be a popular wager. If there's not a carryover going into our Sunday night program, Los Alamitos will add $10,000 to the pick six pool. That's more money for the horse players to win. The best of racing, the best of nighttime quarter horse racing, always at Los Alamitos. Remember, daytime thoroughbred racing returns on Friday, September 16th.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.